Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker, Steve Nolan is our engineer, and this week we're going to bring you the voices of several people involved in drug reform. The good news is that Tommy Chong just got out of federal prison after serving a 9-month sentence for selling bongs over the internet. Tommy was indicted in 2003 as part of the government's Operation Pipe Dreams crackdown on illegal drug paraphernalia. The crackdown involved at least 1,200 officials, including hundreds of DEA agents and at least 103 U.S. Marshals. It led to 60 arrests. It occurred during an orange alert against terrorist attacks and earned the headline, "Fight Al-Qaeda Bombs, Not Bongs." From the Cultural Baggage Show from a couple of months ago, this is Tommy Chong as he was headed to prison.
I guess they figure that's a way to make us quit smoking pot. You know? Make bombs illegal. I know hippies will quit like left and right now. I just told her, by the way, I can't smoke it anymore. I got my bomb. Truth is, when you get a bud, no way to smoke it, you turn into MacGyver in a heartbeat.
This is an interview conducted with Josh Gilbert, a former guest on Cultural Baggage as well, with Tommy while in the federal prison.
Is there anything you can't pull off?
Yeah, I can't get out of here until my time's up. And I'm going to have to, when I get out there, they're going to search me and I have to get stripped naked and they make me lift up my balls and bend over and cough and do all that. Can't stop that, but that's part of the dance. It's part of the thrill of being in here. Sometimes when I strip, I sing this stripper song. Da 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 da. Do a little choke.
So Tommy's out of prison, and here he is talking with Jay Leno last week on the Tonight Show about the bong he sent to Pennsylvania.
To a little head shop run by the DEA.
Okay, so isn't that entrapment? They've ordered it, they've asked you to send it, isn't that entrapment?
This is America.
Okay. Yeah. So if you had had marijuana on your possession...
Which I did.
But they don't charge you, that's a misdemeanor.
No, they never charged me with that. In fact, when they busted in my house, they asked me, they got around to ask me that, you know, do you have any marijuana in your house? And I said, of course, I'm Tommy Chong.
Aren't you tired of being afraid? It's time to get out from under the bed or that dark closet and do something about ending this stupid drug war. Around this great nation of ours, many states have medical marijuana bills either before their legislatures or on the ballot this fall. That holds true for Arkansas as well, where they could use your help in getting the signatures necessary to put their referendum on the ballot.
This is Neil Campbell with the Arkansas Alliance for Medical Marijuana. We've been working on passing a law in Arkansas that would protect sick and dying people from being arrested for using marijuana for medical purposes. Our campaign has gone on now for about 5 years.
Now, as I understand, y'all have a situation where you need to collect more signatures to get a measure on the ballot up there. Tell us more about that.
Yes, the petitions were turned in July the 2nd. Approximately 67,000 names were turned in. We have to have 65,000 verified signatures before this measure will go on the ballot, and so we're going to try to gather at least another 20 or 30,000 signatures during the next 30 days, which is the grace period.
For those who work as gatherers of these petitions or who might want to contribute to this effort, how might they get in touch with you?
Well, they can certainly call me personally on my phone number. Area code 479-839-2475. Area code 479-839-2475. So hopefully there are a variety of ways that folks can get in touch with us.
Tell us about that website.
The website is ardpark.org. That's A-R-D-P-A-R-K. And it contains a PayPal link if folks would like to make a donation. There's also our email addresses at the site. We have an extensive listing of Arkansas patient stories on that website that do a great job of showing how many different kinds of people are in need of this legislation.
Well, very good. I appreciate you taking the time to visit with my audience, and one more time, let's give them that website.
All right. Aardpark.org. That's aardpark.org.
Okay, I do want to recommend to you listeners out there in the vicinity, Arkansas, Texas, Missouri, if you happen to want to see the laws changed in Arkansas to help the people in your state realize there is a better way, please give them a call.
And of course, one of the better ways to get involved is to vote for those politicians and those referendums that stand for what you believe in.
Hi, my name is Jay Goodwill Pierre, Attorney Jay Goodwill Pierre, and I'm the coordinator of Unlock Your Vote Texas.
And tell us what you folks do. What is the nature of your work?
What we do is primarily we educate the public about here in Texas about the right to vote for people who have been formerly incarcerated and who are off paper and parole. And we educate them in 1997, as you do know this, Dean, that the formerly incarcerated persons who are off paper, which is off parole and probation, are allowed to register to vote without a waiting period. Previously, it was a two-year waiting period. And Texas is one of the few states that actually gives formerly incarcerated persons their rights to vote. They don't permanently disenfranchise them. It's more about democracy, and it's more about giving individuals who have been formerly incarcerated understanding of their rights. When you think about the right to vote, that is a right that was taken from them once they've been incarcerated, once they've been convicted of a crime. So that first step when they get out actually is a positive step, which helps them get on the road to proper reentry back into society. Having that universal freedom given back to you, understanding that you do have the right to vote for not only your president, but anywhere from the local door catcher to the governor, to judges and district attorneys, it's an empowerment type of thing, and it makes anyone understand that, like, okay, I have the right to vote, now I'm back in society, and now I'm ready to put forth a change and to do what's right.
All right, and if folks wanted to learn more about your organization and your efforts, where might they go on the Internet?
Yes, www.righttovote.org, www.righttovote.org.
Well, very good, sir. Any additional thoughts you'd like to give to those that were formerly incarcerated? Tell them the parameters, when they're able to vote again.
Well, if you've been formerly incarcerated of a crime and you're off paper, in other words, if you're off parole or off probation, you have a right to register and vote. Unlock Your Vote not only educates and registers people with it, we also are doing a massive Get Out the Vote campaign the closer we get to the election. We're going to be doing rallies, town hall meetings. And so listen up. Just listen to Dean's show and listen to other radio programs, because we're going to do a lot of PSAs, letting everyone know that they have a right to vote. That's the whole thing about Florida purging. In Florida, they totally strip people of the right to vote. And now that's what they're fighting for right now in Florida. And so Texas, we definitely have 835,000 people in the state of Texas who are eligible to vote, but who are not vote because they're not registered and they're formerly incarcerated. They just don't know. And so now you know, and no one has had to battle. Definitely register to vote. Definitely take a positive step to reentry, and definitely just take part in this democratic society by actually voting, educating yourself, and voting for your candidate of your choice.
Well, Jay Goodwill Pierre, the Deputy Director of the Texas Office of People for the American Way, we thank you for joining us on
thank
Cultural Bank.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Dean. Thank you.
Chances are that many of your children take Ritalin before they go to school each day, but it's of late become known that there is a better way, a cheaper way, and a much safer way to fight ADD or ADHD, and it's called medical marijuana. And thanks to our friends at POT TV and MSNBC, this is a discussion with Dr. Claudia Jensen of USC.
There are diagnoses at near epidemic proportions for kids in this country, ADD and ADHD, attention deficit disorder, and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Fair or not, they are so common as to become part of the vernacular, referring to our collective short attention spans and inability to focus. Don't mind him, he's got ADD. According to a member of the American Academy of Pediatrics, when our nation's doctors encounter a patient with one of these disorders, they go right to one drug, methylphenidate, You may know it better as Ritalin. But there is a lesser-known treatment, one that may, in fact, be more effective with fewer side effects. Cannabis. You may know that better as weed, reefer, Mary Jane, marijuana. Dr. Claudia Jensen is a clinical instructor at the University of Southern California and a practicing pediatrician who advocates the use of medicinal marijuana for the treatment of ADD and ADHD. Dr. Jensen, good evening.
Hi, hello. How are you?
This is something you feel strongly about. You even testified before Congress a few weeks ago on the use of medical marijuana. What led you to the conclusion that this is a viable treatment for this disorder?
Well, that's what patients reported to me, so I listened to them. And I started paying attention and asking more questions when I did patient interviews. Seems to be rather consistent. They keep saying it over and over again.
There are parents who are no doubt thinking as they watch this, without any kind of analysis or any kind of medical explanation or the expert testimony of a doctor who has listened to patients, that makes no sense to them, the idea that they are fighting on one front the influence, the pernicious influence of marijuana in a teenager's life, a kid's life, and yet you are here saying that this can be of enormous value in treating this rampant and life constricting disease. How do you respond to people who have the knee jerk reaction? How could this possibly be any good?
Well, first of all, you're right. This is a potentially life debilitating condition for a lot of children and adolescents. They become very angry. I think the answer to that question is that it needs to be evaluated by a physician before it's recommended to a child or an adolescent. And the truth is that one of the reasons that adolescents have an increasing use of cannabis and marijuana in this country is because they've been lied to. They've been told that this is a very dangerous drug and that it has no benefit. And unfortunately, that's not what they experience in the street. And I think it's more appropriate to bring it up out of the streets and into the doctor's offices so that children and adolescents and parents can learn the truth.
Who knows? The truth just might serve us well. Speaking of truth, before we head to our midpoint break, I want to bring you this week's editorial. There is a cozy little trial happening over at the 333rd District Court. Judge Halbach seems to have a fair and open courtroom. The problem lies in the lies of the Chambers County Drug Task Force. Racial profiling leads the laundry list of drug war gone bad tactics that also includes forgery, theft, legal malfeasance, fabrication of drug cases, fraud, computer piracy, perjury, and civil rights violations. Barbara Markham, a former narcotics officer in Chambers County, had seen more than enough to convince her something was very wrong in the tactics of her police force. When no changes were forthcoming following her discussions with her supervisor about racial profiling, and she became a whistleblower. The truth, so seldom told about this drug war, is on open display in Court 333. 150 or more blacks were set up like bowling pins, just like the Houston Crime Lab, responsible for sending thousands to prison on fabricated, it's our best guess, evidence. So too are those framed and sent to prison from Chambers County. I will pay additional visits to the 333rd, but as I left, I visited with two cops and a DEA agent who were waiting to testify. I shared my primary thoughts on the drug war. The day we regulate the distribution of drugs to adults is the day we stop financing the Osamas of Earth, we eliminate the reasons for which most street gangs exist, stop most overdose deaths, take away the job of the street corner vendors who want to sell drugs to our children, and stop the unnecessary expense of $50 billion per year. One cop expressed his concerns that it would be the end of his job. He'd be forced to steal cars to support his family. Another told me I was the enemy and that I did too many drugs. I was not to be trusted and that he would no longer talk to me. This one had about 30 years of drug war under his belt and seemed damn serious. He made me think of assassinated journalists who have gone down fighting against the drug war in Colombia, Mexico, and of late right here in Texas. I say all these cops are frauds that support the drug cartels, pseudo-scientific charlatans, corporate security prostitutes. If ever they try to tell you I was a big druggie and deserved to die like a dog, please remember to ask the opinions of my radio guests, the judges, congressmen, doctors, scientists, and other good friends who have found me to be anything but dangerous. I invited the law enforcement officers to appear on my radio shows. I offered them copies of the booklet I published, Drug Truth, Abramson, Disease. They declined because, after all, I was the enemy. Nobody, anywhere, can validate this drug war. However, your silence does allow it to continue.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of Drug Sense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
Come on, I know you can get this one. The use of this drug has gone down considerably over the last 2 decades. It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Cancers of the lung, trachea, bronchus, larynx, esophagus, pancreas, kidney, bladder, and cervix. Impotency, 25% of deaths from residential fires. Time's up. The answer, tobacco. Taxed, regulated, and in cahoots with the U.S. government.
Hello, my name is Mark Emery. I'm the publisher of Cannabis Culture Magazine. I'm the proprietor of Pot Television. And I urge you, if you want to grow some fine marijuana, to check out emeryseeds.com.
The White House drug czar's policies ensure that marijuana dealers stay in business.
Thank you, Mr. Drug Czar.
The White House drug czar's policies ensure that teenagers have easy access to marijuana.
Thank you, Mr. Drug Czar.
There is a better way. Bring marijuana in off the streets, tax it, regulate it. Contact the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org. What if God smokes cannabis? As I mentioned earlier, there are many states that have the initiative, the ambition, the reason to put medical marijuana on the ballot this fall. And the same holds true for the state of Texas.
My name is Karen Hakela. I'm the Public Relations Director for Texans for Medical Marijuana. We opened our doors January 1st. Our intention and our mission is to pass legislation in the next legislative session so that patients will be guaranteed safe and legal access to medical marijuana with their doctor's recommendation.
There are many positive developments that should make it easier for people to get on board, to become part of this effort. Amongst them are the Texas Medical Association has recently come out for medical marijuana. Tell the folks why it's important they get involved in this particular political session.
Well, you know, the legislators are basically uneducated about this issue. It's medical marijuana has been under the carpet for many, many years, even though, you know, 100 years ago, doctors prescribed it regularly for many ailments. So it's really our job as citizens of Texas to let the legislators know how this is an effective treatment option, which will really save the legislature money in the long run, because if people can grow their own, it's very inexpensive. And they won't have to be going to the emergency rooms for attacks of bouts of pain, which is one of the things that medical marijuana really helps. And also prescription drugs. You know, many people don't have access to insurance. Medical marijuana is a much cheaper option. So our legislators need to hear this kind of thing. They need to hear real stories, real people, how this is helping them. So I think it's important that people reach out, go to their district office, talk to the health aide, try and talk to the actual legislator if they can, and let them know. Because I think really that once they understand, it's just common sense. You know, once they really understand that this is something that's going to help people and in the long run actually save the state money, I think there's no way that, I mean, they're going to go for it. I really do believe that they will.
Now, if they wanted to learn more about your organization and about your efforts, where might they go on the Internet to learn more?
Well, we have a pretty extensive website. It's www.texansformedicalmarijuana.org, O-R-G. On the website, we have a petition. It's basically a belief statement calling on our legislators to enact a law so that people can have medical marijuana with their doctor's supervision. We also have a survey so that we can kind of get to know who the people are who are visiting us. And then we have an action alert email list so that we can let people know what's going on with medical marijuana in Texas, and once we get into the legislative session, when it might be in a hearing, you know, writing a letter to this particular committee person, that kind of thing. And we can divide that up so that we know who is in what district so that you can get to your right member. Also on the website, there's different conditions that medical marijuana is good for, who is behind it, you know, who are some of the prestigious organizations like the Journal of the New England Journal of Medicine has endorsed it, and, you know, it's incredible. There's many, many health organizations that have endorsed the use of medical marijuana. A lot of people don't know that. This is an issue between a patient and their doctor, not the government.
Well, Karen, I appreciate you taking time to talk with my listeners, and I think the point I would like to make is that we don't have to hide anymore. The scientific fact is showing that these laws are just wrong. Am I right?
You're absolutely right. We have an intern working with us right now, pulling together all of the scientific citations and abstracts of different studies, and there's just a multitude. There's just really a tremendous amount. And we've known it. We've known it for a long, long time, but because of propaganda and pressure towards, you know, 1933 or something like that, they were able to throw it out of the pharmacopoeia and make it the devil weed instead of a medical medicine, you know, a medicine that really helps people. So, you know, the time has come, and I believe that we are going to turn this around.
Oft times when people are released from prison after having, quote, served their debt to society, they are unable to find jobs, credit, housing, or education. One of those who works to help end this situation is a gentleman and his organization up in Duncanville, Texas.
My name is Terry Hall. We're in the Volvo business. We do a lot of Volvos, repair them, and we buy them and sell them, try to help low-income families out. Now we're in the process of helping people that come out of the prison, help them find jobs, help them learn how to do different types of work on Volvos, transmissions, engines, paint and body work, electrical work, air conditioning, and it's been... So it's working out, you know.
Yes, sir. And if you will, tell us a bit about some of the people, the prisoners that have come to work for you and how that has developed.
Well, some of the guys that come, they have, you know, serious problems. Some of them have problems with their mothers, their fathers, their brothers and sisters, different problems, you know. They seemingly, to me, just people that need special help. They just need some help. And some of the problems that they have, I've seen them in other people, and they've never went to prison. And thank God that some of us never did go to prison, because we've done some of the same things that they've done and got by with it. But I believe, you know, everybody needs help at one time or another. So sometimes they get out of prison and they just have bad feelings towards maybe their mother. They feel like their mother done something to them, or the father, or society, or whatever it may be. But we try to work with them and explain to them that, you know, life is full of problems, and it's just how you deal with them. And a man just can't take it out on somebody else because he's having a problem, you know. And then we try to teach them skills so that they'll have a skill, because most of these guys, all they did is sit around. If you check their childhood lives out, they were sitting around watching television or just sitting around doing nothing and end up getting caught up in gangs or doing things that they didn't have no business doing. And my parents always told me if idle mind was the devil's workshop. So we try to get them in here and just teach them things, and then the majority of them, if you work with them right, they come out of it. We started out doing this on our own. One or two guys in and just kind of more or less filter them in with some of the other guys we had here. by word of mouth and we get back to the prison or the organizations that sent them over here that we were helping them out, and then they started sending more, and we wasn't able to just take care of the group of people that they were sending, the amount of people that they were sending. So we start getting in touch with different agencies and try to find out what we could do to help. And they explained to us that there were people out there that could help us do what we're trying to do. So, and now we're in the process of getting a building. Well, we've secured one building, but we need this other building to help out with our classes. And what we have to right now is trying to get computers, desks, pencils, paper, people that can donate these type of things, and money to help us out, to help us get this thing rolling, because it's well needed. If you get people that's really concerned and have a heart for what they're doing, it'll work, you know. What we're finding out now that there is funds out there, and there's people out there that, you know, are willing to help, but they just have to find out about you. Basically, if you get people involved, good people, the right kind of people, and put them together, you can really, it'll work. If people really want to do it and have a concern or a heart for people, other people, loving people, that it's going to take somebody that really loves people to get this job done.
Mr. Hogg, many times those who come out of prison are in pretty much dire straits. Tell us some of the other efforts that you might be involved in.
Well, what we do, we try to help them with food. You know, we have different places where they donate food to us, and we try to help them, you know, like with breads and cakes, pies, and chicken, whatever they donate to us, cheeses and different things. We try to help them in that manner. Then also, we send them out, and we also help them try to get their license, because a lot of them come out of jail. They don't have license. They don't have a place, driver's license. They don't have a place to stay. And these programs that they have now, you know, like Section 8 and things like that, the government doesn't allow them to come in to those areas. So they can't vote. So these guys, they really kind of down and out. So it takes somebody that has a lot of heart and concern to really help them over that hump, because I'm finding out the majority of these people, they want a job and they want to work. They don't want to go back to prison. And some of the things that they've told me, being in a prison is worse being in a jungle. That if you work with them the right way and you have enough people helping you out, because you can't do it all yourself, you can get them, you can really, I mean, you could put a dent in it. You could really, there's a lot of guys coming out of prison, but you just need a lot of help to get the job done.
Here's hoping that you enjoy today's special cross-section look at the drug war here on Cultural Baggage, and that you'll join us next week when our guest will be the editor of Extra, the San Antonio newspaper. Our guest will be Frank Levine. As always, because of drug prohibition, I remind you, you don't know what's in that bag, so please, be careful. For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.
Jap dancing on the edge of the